I'm Father Joe Roche from the Marians of the Immaculate Conception, and this is St. Faustina, Divine Mercy in Our Souls. The title of our series comes from St. Faustina's diary, Divine Mercy in My Soul. Here we want to explore how God's mercy is active in all our lives. Recently, down in Washington, D.C., I had the opportunity to speak with Father Ron Pytel, whose miraculous healing led to the canonization of St. Faustina. Please stay tuned.
Father Ron, it's good to have you here today.
Father Joe, it's good to be here with you.
Great. Now, you are the pastor of Holy Rosary Parish in Baltimore. I visited there. It's an absolutely beautiful parish. I looked it up. It dates back to 1887, but you have a long history there, don't you?
Yes, I do. I was born and raised in Holy Rosary Parish. My parents were married there. My grandparents worshipped there when they first came from Poland. And I received all my sacraments there, including ordination, and now I've been pastor there for 10 years.
Oh, that's amazing. That must be something. So a lot of the parishioners you've known since the time you were very young?
Oh, a lot of them know me since I was a toddler.
Now, is the prophet respected in his native place?
Yes, I think so.
Oh, that's good.
I was a little leery about going back at first, but things have worked out very well.
Oh, that's beautiful. Now, I know that you have appeared on Mother Angelica Live, and you've told the story of the healing, but maybe for some of our viewers at home who have not yet heard about the healing, maybe you could briefly share that story with us.
It was back in the spring of 1995 that I was having difficulties breathing, and I was chalking it up to spring allergies because the pollen count was very high that year, and I do suffer from pollen-related allergies. When I developed what I thought was bronchitis, I went to my local doctor, and he confirmed that I had allergy-related bronchitis. But also, after listening to my heart, he said, I want you to have an echocardiogram taken. Mm-hmm. Well, I had the echocardiogram taken, and it showed that I was in severe congestive heart failure, that I was only getting approximately 20 to 25% blood flow through my aortic valve, that there was calcification there. And I immediately was directed to see a cardiologist the next day. Well, the cardiologist confirmed the seriousness of my condition, put me in complete bed rest with an eye to surgery the following week after some more tests were taken. Well, I had the surgery to replace the calcified aortic valve, and I was given a St. Jude valve, a mechanical valve, which relieved the obstruction in the aorta. However, prior to the surgery, my heart had suffered severe damage. The left ventricle, the pump part of the heart, had been trying to pump the blood through this pinhole, actually, which should have been the size of a half-dollar opening. Wow. And the heart had enlarged and lost its elasticity. So basically, the surgery went well. It relieved the pressure. The blood was flowing, but the heart was laborious in its pumping. And in August, the surgery was in June, in August, I was basically told that I probably would never have normal activity again. The doctor was going to let me go back to the parish so that I could see how limited I was. I had to take long rests in the afternoon. And basically that I was uninsurable. I went back to the parish in September after Labor Day, and I saw how limited I was. Well, in October, we always celebrate Sister Faustina's feast day because we are the Shrine for Divine Mercy in the Archdiocese of Baltimore. And on her feast day, we have all-day devotions. And usually the bishop would come for the closing mass. Well, all the bishops that October 5th were in Newark, Delaware, or Newark, New Jersey, excuse me, because the Holy Father was in the States.
Oh, okay.
And he was coming to Baltimore that Sunday. So we were offering our day of prayer and reflection that there would be a wonderful receptivity of the Holy Father in the Archdiocese of Baltimore, and that the people of Baltimore would greet him, and it would be a spiritual time for the city. Mm-hmm. Well, that evening, we ended with prayers for healing. And I was one of the last people to be prayed over. Mm-hmm. Well, I venerated Sister Faustina's relic, mm-hmm. and I fell to the floor resting in the spirit. Mm-hmm. And I was there for about 15 minutes lying on the floor, cognizant, speaking to people, but as though I was paralyzed. I couldn't move. Mm-hmm. And the Blessed Sacrament was an exposition. And I was in the center aisle. I could just see the sacrament. And I began to feel some warmth going through my body. And as quickly as I went down, that's as easily as I stood back up. We had benediction, and I went to my room. It was about midnight at this point. And I realized I'd forgotten to take my heart medication that day. So I took the medication, and I was just sitting, relaxing. And about 45 minutes later, I'm getting chest pains. I'm thinking, oh boy, I did too much today. Mm-hmm. Well, the next day was a very hectic couple of days, Friday and Saturday, in preparation for the Holy Father's visit. And my schedule was very intense. And I was going about it with no problems at all. But I would always get this angina that would gradually dissipate but never completely go away. Mm-hmm. Up until this point, I'm thinking my schedule is too hectic. So I went to the beach for a few days after the papal visit. Mm-hmm. I was relaxed. I was not under pressure. But I got this angina every day. Mm-hmm. One day I was ready to take my medication, and I looked at it, and I thought, maybe it's the medication. So I skipped it. No angina. Whoa. The next day I tried to get my cardiologist on the phone. He was out of town. Mm-hmm. Well, not wanting to play doctor, I thought, I better go back on the medication. As soon as I did, the angina returned. So I called my cardiologist on Monday, and he said, no, the medication shouldn't cause you to have angina. But if you think your body's telling you something, alternate between a dose and a half dose and call me in a week. The half dose was better. There was still some pain, but not as intense. He said, okay, stay on the half dose. You have an appointment with me in 9 days. We'll see what's going on. Well, Dr. Fortuin, he's an eminent cardiologist at Hopkins. He's my cardiologist. He examined me. He listened to my heart with a stethoscope, took my blood pressure a couple of times. And he said, let's go down the hall and do an echocardiogram. Something's going on here. Mm-hmm. Well, the echocardiogram was taken. He read it, and he met me back in his office. He stared at me with what seemed like to be an eternity. And he's shaking his head, and I'm thinking, oh, it must be worse. Mm-hmm. And his exact words to me were, Ron, somebody's intervened for you. I can't explain this. I've never seen it before. He said, your heart is normal. You have no restrictions. You're off all medication except the blood thinner, which you need to take for your mechanical valve. Yeah. And I'll see you in a year.
Oh,
and I went, what? So I left his office. I don't remember getting on the elevator, going to my car. The next thing I did was call my best priest friend, Father Larry Giese, and I told him what Dr. Fortuin said. Mm-hmm. And his response was, well, Ron, we got the miracle we prayed for.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Mm. So
that's amazing. Maybe you could just briefly take us through then, when this realization hit you, to the point of having the miracle accepted by the Vatican.
Yeah, the first thing I did, I wrote three letters. And I sent one to the sisters in Poland, one to Father Serafin Mikulenko, the vice postulator for America in Stockbridge, Massachusetts. And I sent the letter also to the Congregation for the Cause of Saints. And that was in January. And I wasn't getting a response at all. Mm-hmm. In March, I happened to be right here in this conference room for a conference for pilgrimage directors. And I met a man from Stockbridge. He told me he was from the Shrine of Divine Mercy in Stockbridge, and I was telling him my story. Mm-hmm. And he said, does Father Serafin know about this? And I said, well, I wrote to him, but I haven't heard anything. Mm-hmm. And he said, after dinner, I'm going to call my wife. Turns out his wife is Maureen Dygan, the first miracle for the beatification. And at that time, she was Father Serafin's secretary.
That's amazing how God brings people together.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So Father Serafin said, yeah, I know about it, and he was waiting for a response from Rome. So in, I guess it was June, I had to gather all my medical records first. Father Seraphim was going to Rome. This was June of 96. And he took the medical records over, and the doctors over there perused them. And the response came back, yes, it looks like this should be studied further.
Mm-hmm.
So the full tribunal for the Archdiocese of Baltimore met in November of 96, is when the investigation was held. And all of the witnesses were called in and had to give sworn deposition.
Mm-hmm.
And then in December of 96, Father Seraphim, Father Larry Giese, and myself boarded a plane. Mm-hmm. On the Feast of Immaculate Conception, Faustina's favorite feast day of Our Lady.
Okay.
And we took all the documentation to Rome, some 800 and some pages.
Quite a process.
Right. And in January of 97, the case was officially opened in Rome.
Mm-hmm.
And the case proceeded along. All of the doctors agreed, yes, this was a total healing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it was irreversible. Two of the requirements for a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
The third requirement is instantaneity, or a rapidity of time. And none of the doctors would say it was instantaneous because they couldn't see when it happened.
Mm-hmm.
I was not hooked up to machinery 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
They all said, yes, it doesn't make sense, timeline, in terms of the timeline. So we had to prove the instantaneity part.
Mm-hmm.
And the only clue we had was that the medication was causing a problem after that prayer service.
Mm-hmm.
So we began investigating the medication. And it was a doctor from New York who got involved in the case. She was in Washington, and she went to the FDA and found out that there is less than 1% chance that if the heart's normal and the blood pressure's normal, this ACE inhibitor can lower the blood pressure, cause the arteries to constrict.
Mm-hmm.
The result is angina, which is what I was experiencing. And we were directed to a doctor in Massachusetts General Hospital who didn't even want to take the time to review the case because there was just so many records.
Mm-hmm.
He directed us to Dr. Fuster in New York, who is the preeminent international cardiologist.
Mm-hmm.
And we eventually got to him through his administrative assistant, Martha Salazar, who's from the Philippines, and whose cousin began the 3 o'clock habit of prayer of divine mercy in the Philippines.
That's amazing.
So when she heard what the case was about, she slipped some information about my case on his desk.
Beautiful.
And he said, what's this about?
Mm-hmm.
And she told him. And he read through a brief synopsis of the case.
Mm-hmm.
And then said, more information. And eventually he had all 800 pages of medical records, every video of echocardiography, every chest x-ray, my complete medical history. And he took 6 months perusing it. And he came to the conclusion that, yes, there was a very rapid change from a damaged heart to a normal heart.
That's amazing. It almost becomes like a medical detective story to try to get to the bottom of everything.
And what was very interesting is my cardiologist said, how did you get your foot into Dr. Fuster's door? Well, the doctor that was in D.C. and checked on the medication, Dr. Darlene Colhane, is a foot doctor. She's a podiatrist. So God has humor in this whole journey.
That's amazing.
So eventually then Dr. Fuster was admitted to the consortium of doctors who were voting on the case. And the only day that all of the doctors who were on this consortium could gather in Rome was on November 16th, 1999.
Mm-hmm.
And Father Seraphim Mikalenko couldn't be there. He wanted to make sure Dr. Fuster was well taken care of. So I went over to pick him up at the airport. And we had Mass for the Holy Father that morning. And the doctors voted. They were in session from about 9 o'clock to 12 o'clock. November 16th is the Feast of Our Lady of Mercy, the feast day of Faustina's community, and also the Feast of Our Lady of Ostrobrama, which is where the Divine Mercy image was first displayed for public veneration in 1935 in Vilnius.
Mm.
So the Lord kept giving us signs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at the end of the voting session, we were told that the miracle was accepted, which is unusual. Usually you don't hear right away.
Mm.
So it went by the doctors. December 9th, the Board of Theologians passed it unanimously, and the Holy Father proclaimed it on December 20th. And, of course, the celebration was set for October 30th, the Sunday of Divine Mercy in Rome for the candidate. April 30th.
Right, yeah. And you were there.
And I was there, yes.
Tell us about that experience.
It was just an unbelievable experience. I was right by the altar as one of the vested concelebrants. And when the Holy Father, we were standing, when the Holy Father proclaimed her as a member of the hierarchy of saints, I thought I was going to fall over. my legs are going like rubber. Yeah. As a matter of fact, Father Seraphim was standing next to me. He grabbed me by the arm because he could see I was like swaying.
That's beautiful.
And then after the canonization ceremony, there was a special reception in the Vatican, and the Holy Father attended, and it was a 7-course meal.
Mm-hmm.
It was, and my mother had the privilege of being there, my brother, so I had the opportunity of introducing my mother and my brother to the Holy Father.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just an awe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a day of great awe and rejoicing.
That's beautiful. Yeah. Now, the title of our series is Divine Mercy in Our Souls, of course, coming from the diary of St. Faustina. And so what effect has all this had on your soul, your spiritual life?
Well, I have a greater realization, I think, of how the Lord touches people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
As a result of the miracle,
mm-hmm.
I can come back from a day off and have like 28 voicemail messages for people that just want to talk.
Mm-hmm.
And so my ministry has changed a great deal as a result of the miracle, because I'm doing a lot of spiritual direction and counseling
mm-hmm.
over the telephone.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very humbling experience. When the miracle happened, I said, why me?
Mm-hmm.
When Father Larry said, we've got the miracle, we prayed for it, I said, yeah, but why me?
Mm-hmm.
He said, Ron, our faith should be expectant. When we ask for something, we should expect mm-hmm. to get what we ask for.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, especially if we do the asking in complete trust.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a humbling experience. My spiritual life has deepened tremendously.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also, it's given me a greater awareness of human suffering. It's given me a greater opportunity to speak of the Lord's mercy.
Mm-hmm.
Someone asked, why do you think 2 Americans were chosen? And I reflected on that. And in the first case, in Maureen's case, she was a mother who was eventually going to lose a son at a young age, young Bobby. And I think Faustina, because of her great devotion to another mother who lost a son at a young age, our Blessed Mother,
mm-hmm.
beseeched the Lord for Maureen. In the second case, the Lord told Faustina to pray especially for priests, because when priests proclaim his mercy, even the most hardened sinners will crumble.
Mm-hmm.
And so she chose a priest. And the healing was of the heart,
mm-hmm.
which is the center of the mercy and love of Jesus,
mm-hmm.
in which we're all enfolded.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she did get a little, what should I say, ethnic. She chose a Polish-American.
That's wonderful. Now, I know when you told the story in the Marian Helper's Bulletin of the healing, you felt that it was like our Lord's heart touching your heart. There must have been a connection there.
Yeah, you know, I called for my appointment with my cardiologist.
Mm-hmm.
I was supposed to see one cardiologist, and Father Larry said, no, 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 you're going to see the best. You're going to see Nick Fortuyn.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually called to try to get me in. His secretary said, oh, we can see him at the end of June.
Mm-hmm.
He said, no, he won't be here at the end of June.
Mm-hmm.
He's in critical condition. So she called me, and she said, if you can be here in a half an hour, Dr. Fortuyn can see you. He has a cancellation.
Mm-hmm.
So I was there in a half an hour. I found out about a year and a half later, his cancellation was, she told him he couldn't go to lunch. He had to see me.
Oh, that's too much.
And Mary's a very devout Catholic girl. Mm-hmm. So she has a great concern when one of the patients is a priest or a nun. And she got me in there. So I owe a great deal to that first secretary. The second secretary that I owe a great deal to is Secretary of Divine Mercy, St. Faustina. Because mm-hmm. I think she just went to the Lord and said, do something. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the love from his heart touched mine mm-hmm. and healed me.
Beautiful.
That's simple.
And you're very clear that it's our Lord who performed the miracle and St. Faustina who interceded.
Yes, very clear about that.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Now, how about the shrine in Baltimore? Now that St. Faustina is becoming more well-known, are people responding to this message? Are people coming to the shrine to pray?
And yes, they are. And we have a shrine and we have a gift shop in the lower church. And mm-hmm. We've had buses come from New Jersey, from Delaware, from Pennsylvania, New York, Connecticut. We've had individual pilgrims from the Philippines, from Poland, of course, from Germany. So it's really, we've had pilgrims from around the world. And mm-hmm. every Friday we have the perpetual novena to Divine Mercy at the 3 o'clock hour. Mm-hmm. And that's growing in attendance. Mm-hmm. Last year on Mercy Sunday, of course, I was in Rome. It was the day of the canonization. I was not there, but when I came home, I was told we had 1,700 people at Holy Rosary.
That's beautiful. That's great.
So we're expecting a very large crowd this year.
Oh, that's beautiful. Have you felt like a closer relationship with St. Faustina as a result of this whole experience?
Oh, yes, I have. And I kind of had a devotion to her before the miracle happened. My devotion was growing. And the more I read about it, the more I read the diary, I've been through the diary, I guess, about three times. Mm-hmm. So my understanding of her as a person, and of course, I guess my affinity towards her being very much an ethnic Polish-American, mm-hmm. my Polish ethnicity means a lot to me. Mm-hmm. But now, after the favor that she granted to me, or had interceded for me, mm-hmm. it's almost like she's just my friend who's with me all the time. I'm constantly aware of her.
Mm, that's great. That's great. So you have like a prayer life that includes asking St. Faustina to intercede even in the normal things of life.
Oh, yes. Oh. And for our parish, mm-hmm. for people who are ill, people who are suffering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
And our Holy Father, by proclaiming St. Faustina as the first saint of the new millennium, I think wanted to point something out to our world, and especially that message that we must trust in God's mercy. So what do you think the world needs to hear, or what is maybe blocking us from hearing it? Why does he want to point this out at this time now?
Well, I think because he looks at the new millennium as a new advent in the church, where we've gotten through probably the most horrific century in the history of humanity, with man's cruelty to man in so many different ways. And there's still cruelty, man's cruelty to man. Things such as abortion, ethnic cleansing that's taking place in various parts of the world. And the Holy Father is saying, look, unless we want to repeat some of the tragedies of history, some of the genocides that have taken place in the last century, we need to look, first of all, we need to ask the Lord for mercy and forgiveness for what we've just gone through. Mm. But at the same time, we, in turn, need to inculcate that mercy into our own lives so that we can indeed have a new Pentecost, a new springtime, not only in the church, but in the world at large. Yeah. And I think it's the asking in trust, knowing that God's love for us is so great mm-hmm. that if we really ask for something in trust, mm-hmm. that it will be granted. Mm-hmm. That expectant faith that Father Larry mentioned mm-hmm. that we should have. Yeah. And I think the Holy Father is not only holding Faustina up as a model, mm-hmm. but most importantly, the message that the Lord gave her, mm-hmm. the message that's in the diary.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, Father Ron, this has been fascinating. I wish we could spend more time, but I am aware of the time. So thank you for joining us here today.
You're welcome, Father Joe. Thank you.
Thank you.
Please join us next week at this time for St. Faustina, Divine Mercy in Our Souls on EWTN, Global Catholic Radio.